On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we follow the train tracks to the woods in South Harlow as we look for Christian themes in the 1986 classic Stand By Me. Chris Chambers is a genuine peacemaker. Is this what helps Gordy LaChance become wise in the eyes of the Lord? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 52. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan, man.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell, and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You are tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Morgan Freeman.
No, that was not Morgan Freeman. That was his Hollywood twin, Corey Feldman.
Hey, speaking of Morgan Freeman.
Who?
Let me slow down. Hey, we have Morgan Freeman coming up later on in the show in our Facebook rundown.
Oh, that's right, we do.
A little tease for everybody up there. What's been going on?
Morgan Freeman.
Hey, there he was right there.
That was actually, that was, wow. That was, that was the best ever.
So anyway, so big thing this week is that the third grade puppet team that I've been
did you say third rate puppet team?
Third grade.
Oh, okay.
Third
goodness.
Grade.
I was going to say
by no means.
I'll edit that out.
By no means are these guys third rate.
Okay, okay.
Third grade puppet team, getting them ready for their competition this weekend. They're shipping off to the Gaylord Opryland Hotel.
Oh.
This weekend, let's see. By the time this show gets out, they will have been on the road, I think.
You hadn't said anything about a competition at Opryland.
Well, I mean, because I didn't want to say anything because I'm not able to go to it.
I gotta
work.
Okay.
So it kind of gets me down. But I know these guys, they've practiced hard at it for a good couple months now. They're good. They're ready to go. They're ready for an audience.
Awesome.
I'm proud of them.
Awesome. A big round of applause.
Yeah.
Good job. Oh, you know what? We should have mentioned this is our Good Friday episode.
Oh, it's always a Good Friday when the show comes out.
Nice. But according to the liturgical calendar.
Oh, Brent, that Good Friday, yes. Wait, does that mean today's that double day? That Monday, Thursday?
I don't know what a double day is.
That Monday, Thursday?
What's that?
I don't know. I do not mean any disrespect when I say that. It's just a joke.
It just came out that way.
Some people say Maundy Thursday.
He's making fun of people.
Maundy Thursday.
Making fun of the way people, third rate puppet. What in the world?
it just goes to show what kind of influence this movie has had on me for the past week.
Oh, goodness. Once we get into that discussion. Oh, let me let everybody know that we now have a live page on the Christ in Cinema site as well. So whether you're at the GCTnetwork.com main site, or if you are on Christ in Cinema over there at ChristInCinema.com, just click on the live tab and it'll take you to the page with our video player, our audio player, our chat room. Interact with us. Watch us as we do the show here. We'll tell you more about that, times and channels and all that good stuff at the end of the show. What else has been going on, Brendan?
Well, I actually got in a lot of movies this week.
A lot, huh?
A lot.
Lay them on us.
Well, in addition to this episode movie,
yes.
Stand By Me, in addition, Sunday went to go, Sunday went to go see Do You Believe, but Fiasco, and ended up seeing Get Hard.
Oh, no.
I know, I regret going to go see it. I knew what it was.
I can't even. You know what you get on that? Wow!
But I think I redeemed it.
It's gossip.
By seeing, I got three movies. I rented three other movies. Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, fun film.
Oh, yes. And very, very Christian sounding.
Oh, some potential themes, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's on the list for a reason.
Okay.
And then Foxcatcher.
Oh, now that is with Steve Carell.
Yes.
But you wouldn't know it was Steve Carell.
Exactly. And you would kind of know it was Channing Tatum, but you definitely would not know it was Mark Ruffalo.
Oh.
He's in it, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, yeah. So here's what I know of this film. Steve Carell is some rich fella that, for some reason, he's always had a burr under his skin that he wanted to manage or coach a Olympic-winning wrestling team or wrestler or something?
Well, I don't think his intentions are that noble.
Oh, okay.
His character, John DuPont, he is, and it's based on a true story. These things actually happen, so I'm going to be careful not to spoil anything.
Oh, okay, should I
write it? No, not
okay.
yet.
Okay.
Don't hit that button.
All right.
John DuPont, he is a rich fellow. He's a wealthy American. You know, the families before him, his ancestors, his, you know, predecessors, whatever you want to call them, they are, you know, they're the wealthy landowning, estate-owning people of America. They own all these acres of land, hundreds of acres, and they go on, you know, they would go on their own little fox hunts. Of course, you know, you'll just release a fox in front of the dogs, and the dogs would go chase it down.
Right, right.
And the horses, and, the, you know, they'd ride the
this
horses.
This is the Blue Bloods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a Thurston Howell the Third, and...
Yes, exactly. Well, although he even says, I do not share my family's taste for horse flesh, you can tell he does. He wants to be able to control something, and for that something that he controls to achieve something, and therefore he gets the credit for the achievement.
Okay.
That's his modus operandi, and his thing that he wants to control is Olympic gold winning wrestlers.
Hmm. Okay.
Which happens to bring him to Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo, two brothers, Mark and Dave Schultz. You know, they won the Olympic gold medals. The story takes place in 88, I believe, and they had won gold medals in the Olympics prior.
All right.
And he wants to get them on their team, on his team, so he can, you know, take credit.
Interesting.
And it just goes deeper. It goes a lot deeper.
Down the rabbit hole?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Any Christian themes that you were able to pull out of that?
I don't know. I'm going to watch it again.
And just see if it's worthy of the list?
It's definitely worthy of the Monday movie review.
Okay. Okay.
So that's probably going to be my next subject for that coming out next week.
All right.
So that movie. And then I also rented Her.
Who?
Her.
Her what?
Her.
Her Majesty the Queen?
With River Phoenix's brother.
Oh, Joaquin. Yeah, oh, Joaquin. And Black Widow.
Yes.
And she's a phone.
Well, her voice. Yeah, she's somehow in the movie, but she's a phone.
Oh, right. And?
So, no, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. That's the thing.
I only rented it last night. Well, last night I watched Edge of Tomorrow and Foxcatcher, so I didn't have time for Her.
Okay, well, that sounds funny. So I want to hear about that movie next week.
Okay.
Okay, so make sure you tell us that. Hey, real quick, Brendan, we've been talking about this film, Behind the Mask, the Christian film. We've talked about it at least on two separate episodes. Has John Rhys-Davies, FCC's very own.
My wee lad Gimlet.
John Rhys-Davies. That's exactly it. And, of course, over 400 homeschool volunteers went into the making of this film. Well, our buddy John Wilkerson over at thewiredhomeschool.com just released today his newest episode, an interview with director Chad Burns. Everybody must go over to thewiredhomeschool.com and listen to this episode. I've never been excited about a, quote, Christian film like I am about this one. Brendan, you're going to want to listen to this podcast. Everybody out there, whether you're a homeschooler or not, you want to listen to this guy, and he's really cool. I didn't get to listen to the entire show because I was preparing for this show, but I got enough of it to know that not only is the director Chad Burns, he's a homeschooler. He was homeschooled grade 1 through 12, and didn't know that he was going to be a filmmaker. So it's a really neat story as far as that goes. But also his insights that the revelations about the type of person that John Rhys Davies is, and how he interacts on the set, and how he treats people, you'll want to hear. So it may even raise up your opinion of Gimli / Sala, the great John Rhys Davies, all that much more.
Okay,
so, everybody, get to thewiredhomeschool.com and listen to that interview, and stay for cake. What else have we been doing?
Stay for cake.
Well, that
right.
means all the other episodes that he does.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that was the movie review for me. And then, books.
Yes.
I'm doing some books.
Uh-huh.
By the way, there is a nice little bookstore in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, called the Christian Publishers Outlet.
Yes.
And apparently...
I've never been in there.
Michael.
Huh.
Michael.
Is that that white brick building?
No. This is part... If you're in Murfreesboro... fellow Tennesseans, or
oh, here's your
other people.
For geography corner here on Fighting Christ in Cinema.
Oh, here you go. Or if any fans want to come over and pop a visit,
you know,
but here's what you do.
You're always welcome to the studio.
You're in the Target parking lot.
Yeah,
it's in one of the strip malls. That's not connected to Target, but intersects Target.
All right.
It's over there.
Okay.
It's actually, it shares the same building as the Toys R Us over there.
I know exactly
off
where
of,
that is. Okay.
Old Fort Parkway.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, as we've talked about before, our patron saint, Philip.
Yes.
Fond of Horses, Herd, he gave us a little gift on Amazon Kindle.
Yes, he did.
The Grace Notes by Collected Writings of Philip Yancey.
Yeah.
I got to say, I'm still loving it.
Oh, me too.
First introduction to Philip Yancey.
Yes.
First actual, you know, reading material. And I was in CPO the other day, and I was just looking at the devotionals, and I saw Grace Notes. And I thought, oh, wow, look at that book. I didn't realize it was so thick. So, I pulled it out and looked at it, and, you know, the publisher publisher price is like $17-$18.
Uh-huh.
Michael, I got it for $3.47.
Whoa! A deal at twice the price.
Yes.
Wow.
So shout out to the people over at Christian Publishers Outlet for those prices.
I need to go over there and see what they have. Oh.
Sorry, I need that cough button.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's on the wish list.
So, yeah. So I'm finishing up Mere Christianity. I'll probably finish that up on the ride home tonight.
Yeah.
And then after that, I've got my next pick. It's called Disarming Scripture.
Whoa.
Cherry-picking liberals, violence-loving conservatives, and why we all need to learn to read the Bible like Jesus did.
Oh!
So...
this goes along with a book you read a couple of weeks ago.
Misreading Scripture
yes.
Through Western Eyes.
All
and,
right.
And it was actually based on that suggestion
okay.
that this book popped up in my suggested reads list. So I'm going to check it out. I'll get back to you when I start it.
All right. I did start The Maze Runner.
Yes, do tell.
Yeah, I'm just, four chapters into it, and I'm loving it. I'm listening to it, so audio, obviously. And it's an easy listen. And entertaining, and the pacing is great. I'm listening to it at, I think I'm listening to it at 1.25 speed, maybe 1.5. And but it, I mean, the time flies when you're listening to it, and very enjoyable. I can't wait till we can get to the movie on this one.
Okay.
But I don't know that I'm going to have it done in a couple of weeks because I have decided to dive back after taking a breather. I've gone in head first into this study on the fires that consumes it's about eschatology and the fate of the wicked after the judgment, and it is heavy duty. So this week, Brendan and I actually spent time in the Apocrypha and the Pseudepigrapha.
Michael.
And getting pretty deep and enjoying that thoroughly, along with all the blog posts. Oh, but here's another thing: the Philip Yancey book. I'm every morning I read that, and then right after I read a psalm. and it's just a great way to start the day.
Look, that's cool.
It's, you know what, between you, me, and the doorpost, this is the first devotional I have ever attempted to read through. And, hey. And you know, because I feel obligated, because Phil gifted that to us, so it's obviously important to him, so therefore it's important to me, and I'm reaping the benefit. I've already gotten material from this for another show that I'm working on for the GCT Network.
Well, it
is, it's great stuff, especially right now leading up to Easter, because all these, you know, these past few days have all been Easter themed. Just, you know, amazing book, amazing book. Anything else?
No, I think we're ready to go to.
You
want to
go and see this movie?
Wait, now do we need a DeLorean to go back in time?
You know what we need? What I will do is, before we even start, there is no spoiler alert on this episode. If you haven't watched a film that was made in 1985, released 1986, right around there, you only have yourself to blame. We're moving forward. You want to go to the movies?
Yeah.
Get yourself a soda.
In all our lives, there's a fall from innocence, a time after which we are never the same. It happened in the summer of 1959. A long time ago.
Oh, man. Where do you hear this? Where do you hear this?
8:00.
What is it, man?
You guys want to go see a dead body?
When the night has come and the land is dark.
We interrupt to bring you an update on the search for the missing 12-year-old Ray Brower.
Kid's gone. They're never going to find him.
Not where they're looking.
And the moon is the only light we'll see.
You think Mighty Mouse could beat up Superman?
Mighty Mouse is a cartoon. Superman is a real guy. No way a cartoon could beat up a real guy.
Go and stand by me. Oh, stand by me.
We're going to be famous. We're going to be on every radio and TV show in the country.
I still don't think we should go.
Have one food for the rest of my life? That's easy. Pass. Cherry flavor pass. No question about it.
I like to go someplace where nobody knows me.
We found him. We got dibs.
Oh, we better start running, Eyeball. They got dibs.
There's four of us, Eyeball. We just make your move. You're dead.
For some, it's the last real taste of innocence.
I'm never going to get out of this town, am I, Gory? You can do anything you want, man.
And the first real taste of life.
This is really a good time.
The most.
A blast.
But for everyone, it's the time that memories are made of.
So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand. Stand by me.
Brendan, I have to start off right now for the first time ever saying that I do not recommend anybody to watch this movie.
Oh, Michael.
I'm going to do it.
Michael.
In all good conscience, I cannot tell somebody, hey, or Christians out there, sit down and watch Stand By Me. Great film. Now, but instead of calling this episode off and saying we're not even going to do this because, like I said, in good conscience, I cannot say that anybody ought to watch this film. What I will say is that you know people that have watched this film, and so we're going to give you the tools. So if you haven't seen it yet, which would be strange, this is a very popular movie. But at the very least, I think the tools that we'll give you today, you wouldn't even have to see it, and you can say, you could just throw it. Plant a couple of seeds for people. Maybe you can open up the door that you can talk about the gospel. So this is really going to be the strangest episode of Finding Christ in Cinema as far as I'm concerned, because this is a film that I'm not recommending anybody see.
Well, now let me throw out this then. It is one of the fringiest films, you know, we've looked at, I would say.
Yeah.
Because on the surface it doesn't, you know, it really doesn't seem redeemable, but the fact that we found some stuff,
we're going to redeem it.
We're digging up some stuff. We're going deep.
Mm-hmm.
Just that alone means that it still can be used.
Yeah, absolutely.
To help.
That's hence why I didn't say forget it. We're not doing this movie
now. And then I would also add, Because of that, you could potentially, with this film more than most of the films we've done, you could reach, you know, someone you don't, or you know, does not believe.
I agree with you 100%.
So it provides that opportunity. However, the film itself is raunchy.
Yeah.
Is dirty.
Yes.
It's foul. Foul.
Yeah.
Foul language.
Crude,
abound.
Crass. Every adjective that you can throw at it that conjures up the idea of seedy underbelly of life, of the way that people can behave.
Yeah. You thought Green Mile was bad.
Shawshank Redemption.
You thought Shawshank Redemption was bad.
And here's the reason why I think that this movie is worse, even though the language is on par. Okay. But the reason why is, well, let me ask you this. In your opinion, you're a storyteller, an actor, a practitioner of the art. Is this a great movie?
As a, just from a strictly story plotline point?
Yeah, academically.
I would say yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, defend that if you would like to.
Because the...
I feel like Siskel and Ebert. Okay,
hey,
go.
Hey, here you go. Me personally...
This is the episode where FCC turns a corner.
Are you
going to... Oh, no. Interjection. Sorry. Well, I knew you were going to cough, and we don't have that cough.
You did not
yet.
Know
I did
that.
I did know it.
Okay.
I can feel it.
Okay. I would say... And we got to both... Well, hold on. Give me a mulligan.
Okay, mulligan coming right up.
To answer that, or to better edify my answer, Michael, I'm going to give what I believe is the story with this movie.
All right.
From beginning to end. The story follows Gordy as a young boy trying to cope with the death of his brother.
Right.
And with that being the main story, I would say that yes, this is a good story, a well-told story.
I'm talking, so good. So not just fair, good, excellent. Where on the scale do you think that this falls?
On that scale, I would say just good.
Okay.
I wouldn't say excellent. Excellent.
Or would it go...
I would say excellent.
Would it go fair, good, great, excellent?
Somewhere between good and great.
Okay.
Between good and great.
All right. Can I interject?
Yes.
Before you go further. Okay. Is this a coming of age story or a you can't go home again story? Or is there even a difference between those two? I mean, that's a genre, isn't it? Wouldn't you say, of storytelling?
Well, I would say those two ideas blend in. You know, if we were to look at a Venn diagram,
the
circle between the two would be huge.
Okay.
And the differences between the two may not even be...
There'd be shades, huh?
Because, I mean, it's about...
Gradients, I should say.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. You want to say coming of age. All of the boys, they come to an age, or they come to a time in their life of understanding that death is not funny.
True.
That's the lesson they learn. They, and I'll get to that in my point later. They learn this lesson. And of course they're out on a journey. They're out on a quest, which is another story archetype that this movie would fit in.
Right.
They go out on a quest to find this dead body for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Hold me back, Michael. I'm about to go on my point. And of course, you know, they've been changed on this quest when they reach the destination.
Okay, let me steer you away from that because you are going to get into your point.
Okay.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
That is a very important part of this. What I'm trying to get at is I think that there are much better movies that we could steer people toward.
I do agree with that.
One of them being the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You want a coming of age / can't go home again story. There you go. Even Castaway was a you can't go home again story. Things change. You can't go back to the way that they were. You are a changed person. But I mean, even the similarity in when they are going home to when the hobbits were going back to the Shire is all different. The Shire was smaller. Yes.
May I interject?
Please.
At least with my experience, coming of age usually refers to when children are the protagonists. And
But
and
see,
they
now
go
a
through
hobbit,
a growing experience.
Hobbits are, their people are childlike because they are ignorant of the ways of the wide world. They live in basically, I mean, a protected area of the world. By design, it was protected by, I mean, Aragorn was already protecting the Shire before they even knew who he was. We don't get that from the movies. But it was being protected, especially by the Rangers. And so the Denzians, all the hobbits in the Shire, they didn't know what was going on in the wide world. So they were childlike in that respect. You didn't like Denzians?
Isn't it Denizens?
Oh, sorry. It could be.
So that I didn't know. So then to that, I would say then yes, Lord of the Rings would be a type of coming of age story. However, generally speaking, coming of age refers to the adolescence.
The passage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rite of passage. Yes. Yes. Whereas you can't go home again. That would be like Castaway. That would be a difference because Tom Hanks' character, he already knows, stuff about the world. He's already grown. He's already matured. But he still gets changed on this journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because he's out on that journey, and that's where he gets changed, he therefore cannot go home again, as we see in the scene where he's in the hotel room. He's got all this freshly cooked seafood, and he's got that little click lighter.
Yeah,
he's like, I work so hard for this. Why is it so easy? You know, so we see that, and I think this film bleeds into both, but I would say it falls more into the category of coming of age.
All right, so. Then you disagree with me when I say that I would recommend people not watch this film?
It just depends on who you're recommending films to.
Okay.
Because, like I said, this film...
I would be horrified to know that my kids were watching this movie.
Well, okay. No, true. I would not suggest it to younger people. Right. I would suggest it to kids. Well, kids. To grown people.
Like 65 and up? That are so hard of hearing that they aren't going to catch most of this stuff. I always have the closed caption on so that I can actually hear what people are saying, understand what they're saying.
Oh.
And I'm reading and go, oh my goodness.
It's foul, loathsome, evil little cockroaches.
Wow. and you know, when I
and,
was
and they're getting, so flippant about it.
Yeah. But now the case could be made because look at their upbringing. Look at the situations that they're in. Look at everybody in this film is broken.
Yeah.
Everybody is. So yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying that for you folks out there, you don't have to watch this film in order to use it.
Because there, like you said, there are better movies out
Somebody's
there.
Somebody's going to come up to you and say, you ever seen the movie Stand By Me? And you don't even have to say yes or no. You just say, isn't it amazing how in this part of the movie it reminds me of such and such? And we'll give you that. Here as we're we'll give you those forthwith, but anything else? Let's talk about some of the performances. Let's get into some fun stuff.
Okay,
after arguing here,
arguing.
Hey, standout performance as far as you are concerned.
Okay, I'm gonna say each kid had their own moments of standing out. And I don't know if I'm prepared to answer which one was better.
Okay.
Which one was higher. I will say I think River Phoenix's standout was kind of twofold, but it's always with Gordy. There's the scene where they're watching, they're standing watch at the campfire.
Yeah.
And he goes into why he thinks he's...
Yeah. I'll get into that in my point.
Okay, you will. Okay, so there's that scene we'll talk about later. And then his other scene would be... part of my point, where after they found the body, and you know, Gordy doesn't want to, take it back or anything. He just wants to sit and go down his own rabbit hole of mourning.
Yeah,
which is finally the catharsis he needed.
Yes,
from 4 months ago when his brother died.
Yes.
Okay, so that's River Phoenix. Gordy, let's see, where would his A lot of their acting chops came out on the train bridge, on the bridge with the train tracks. Even though
when they were ditching the train, or
well, they were trying to not be smushed by it,
right?
Not be ran over, yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah, dodging train, yeah. Now Corey Feldman, he just weirds me out. but the kid really showed up when they're at the the junkyard.
Yeah.
And the mechanic starts disrespecting his father. Yes. You know,
he just goes ballistic.
And then in the scene after that, when he's wiping the tears away from his eyes.
I'm ruining your good time.
I'm sorry. Yeah, and that really, I mean, I know that's the character, but I really felt like Feldman brought it.
He said that of all the things that he had done, all the roles that he had played, Teddy Duchamp was probably the closest to his own personality the things that he was going through in life at that time.
Oh well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Vern. Gotta talk about Vern.
What's his name?
Jerry O'Connell. Yeah.
To me, standout performance. All across the board. The kid nailed it.
You think so?
To be that character, okay, here's Vern, Jerry. This is what Vern's like. You know, they're talking to this 12-year-old kid. This was his first role, I think. Okay. Jerry, here's Vern. This is what he's like. Okay, yeah, I got it. You know, he probably played himself, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought that...
Come on, guys, I forgot the secret knot.
I mean, Now, the legend is that the rest of the kids came up with that because they felt that would help. That was the introduction to Vern, and all the kids thought, hey, you know what, that's really going to set the tone for what kind of kid Vern is. You know, he's just kind of,
I brought a comb.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And when he drops it on the train tracks, the comb. You know, and so what? Anyway, River Phoenix, I've always thought, I haven't seen this movie in over two decades. I watched it once, but I thought that he nailed it. I mean, all the way through the movie. You're mentioning his interactions with Gordy, but I think his interactions with Corey are fantastic with Teddy. I can never remember Teddy Duchamp.
Teddy.
In fact, I'm going to bring up a little bit of that in my points, but and it really tells what kind of a person Chris Chambers is, always has been, and will die being. And that's why I think, you know, we just used it the last episode, so I'm not going to pull out the Grand Slam sound effect again, but. It was a grand slam. What else? Who else? Any standouts?
Well, okay.
Can I just say that the dad is the worst actor in the world?
Yes.
Can I say that?
Man. He stands out for all the wrong reasons.
Yes. Terrible actor that guy is. He was in.
It should have been you.
He was in Total Recall, the first Total Recall, the original one.
The what?
Yeah.
What
it should have been that? You. And then when he drops his eyes, it's like, wrong cut. Let's do that again, please. Where was Rob Reiner? Obviously didn't even care about that guy.
He was out to lunch or something.
He let the B team do that. Because that was awkward and bad. That guy's a terrible actor. I'm sorry.
Good old Kiefer.
Kiefer Sutherland. Terrible job, Kiefer.
Poor Kiefer.
Man.
He's got vampire.
He lives in a big shadow.
Yeah.
Because this is the second episode in a row that we've had a Sutherland. And thankfully, the Sutherland that preceded is a fine actor, a master of the craft. And this was...
Now, hold on.
I know, Kiefer was only like 19 or whatever when he was...
Kiefer had just got done off a diet of blood.
I think he was shooting both movies at the same time, wasn't he? Lost Boys is what we're talking about.
You know, well, like you said, he was only 19. He may have just been starting out.
Yeah.
To work on his own craft.
It was so forced, and so it was just awkward.
Yeah.
His minions did better job than he did.
Mm-hmm. Especially Vern's brother. Four Eyes, I think.
Yeah, Eyeball.
Eyeball, that's it, yeah. Corey was Four Eyes, the Four-Eyed Psycho.
Yeah, Bradley Gregg is his name. They had Casey, I don't ever know how to say his last name, Simazco. He's one of the guys from, he was in the Back from the Future series as one of Biff Tannen's.
Goonies.
Yeah.
Goons.
But anyway.
Can't say Goonies, that's a different movie.
Okay, what else? What else do you want to talk about?
Okay. We have to say it because we haven't said it yet. John Cusack. Now, okay, his performance. We kind of had a little talk about this before the recording.
That's
of the
where
show.
I said that his sister's a much better actor than he is. Now, his performance, looking at it and say, okay, technically speaking, great job. okay, you want an actor to come on, say their lines, deliver them, have some emotion behind it, you know, be something other than, you know, an extra, okay?
Yeah.
So, or somebody that you pulled off the street and gave them some lines to read. The guy can act. I mean, you know, technically speaking.
Yeah.
But there, it was wrong. There was something completely wrong about it. It was too cartoonish. Too forced.
Too stylized.
Yes, that's a good word.
Too idealized.
But now, there you go, and that's what we were discussing.
Yeah.
What was our conversation? How did it lead to that?
Well, because when John Cusack as Gordy's brother Dennis,
Denny.
We first see him. Well, technically, we first see him in a photograph, but then that triggers the memory,
the flashback
of. Of Denny giving Gordy that New York Yankees hat.
Yep.
And that was an endearing moment for Gordy. And it's supposed to be for us as the audience as well.
Yes.
It's just in that moment, though, like you said, it seems forced. And honestly, I think it was the accent. And then it was that awkward Mark Wahlberg neck bro hug.
Yes, that was awkward. Come here.
Yeah, come
yeah,
here.
That's
come
just here. Not. No, come people here. Don't do that.
You know, but I mean, now he could have just been, you know, having fun with his younger brother,
right?
And it could have been by design.
It was too perfect, though.
I know.
That's the problem. This was too sterile. It was sterile. It was perfect. It was pristine. It was clean.
Even with like the filter on the camera. It made it seem like this is this is a little weird. But anyway, I don't know. Like, did we ever decide if it was either
one? Is that how it really happened, or was that Gordy's projection? Is that what he wanted it to be?
I honestly don't know if I could answer that.
Or sitting at the table and his dad totally ignoring him, not passing the potatoes because his dad's wanting to talk to Denny, his prize, you know, his prize pig.
Right.
This blue ribbon cow right there, that, you know, football star, and you know what, you know, who's this little skinny kid? He doesn't do anything I understand or I even care about.
Right.
And but yet Denny turns, you know, hey, you know, interjects and sticks up for him.
Hey,
did you read
his story?
Yeah.
Now that scene, I actually think did a better job of showing the connection between Denny and Gordy.
Yeah.
Better than the New York Yankee hat, but I think they only set that up. Just to have the scene later,
yes,
so Kiefer
so he can
have it stolen, and yeah. we could experience
that. And Kiefer doesn't even put it on. He gives it to Eyeball.
I know, right?
Because I don't even care that I stole this from you. I don't even care about this thing. I know you do, so he gets to have it.
There you go.
Oh, man. Oh, and they say that Kiefer says that he bullied all these kids during the filming of the movie so they wouldn't get to like him.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You know,
talk about method acting.
Yeah, there you go. I'll bet you. I'm telling you, Donald Sutherland told him, come here, boy. This is what you're going to do. This is what you need to do. You need to scare those kids so they don't even like you, so it'll be more authentic on film, because you can't act very well. So we're going to have to. No. Okay, but where I was first going to go with this movie was going to focus on Denny. I was going to focus on him as the Christ figure, because he was the advocate for his little brother. And we are adopted. We are brothers of Christ, right? As
right.
being adopted into God's family. He's our elder brother. And, you know, I was really wanting to go with that.
Honestly, I think you still can. We'll get to it
All
later.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into some points.
Let's
talk about this movie. Let's get this over with and move on, shall we?
Okay. All right. I'm sorry I'm dragging you through this, Michael. Thank you for going along this journey with me to see the dead body at the end.
There you go.
Okay, so, and we're actually going to set up the points a little differently than the norm. I'm going to provide a little framing device, much like the film does, and then Michael's going to come in the middle.
Whoa!
You know, we're gonna shake it up.
Getting crazy.
I know. So, the whole reason this story is being told is because the writer. The character played by Richard Dreyfuss,
a fine actor.
Yes, exactly. The technical story takes place in the present day of the film, which is, you know, 1986. It takes place then, and he's sitting. It opens up. He's sitting in his car and he's reading the newspaper, in which it shows the death of his childhood friend Chris Chambers, the character played by River Phoenix that we get to meet later in the film.
Of course, we don't know who Chris Chambers is at this point.
At the moment, yeah. We don't know at the moment.
Yep.
But we can tell that it's obviously causing him some grief.
Yes.
And I even like the way it's set up. He's sitting in the car. Then, you know, we see him, you know, just, you know, leaning and moping.
Yep. He's missing his friend.
Yeah. And then we see the newspaper.
Yeah.
And then back to him. And then in the background, in that same shot, two friends ride by on their bicycles.
Young kids, about 12 years old. Boom.
And then that's when it starts
great
to hit him.
Framing device, huh?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Rob Reiner is a good filmmaker.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. And this is where we get that first sentiment that sets up the story.
Okay, starting off with clip number one.
I was 12 going on 13 the first time I saw a dead human being.
He was 12 going on 13. He was the same age as the kids that ran by on the bicycle. And it's just interesting that his friend's death, well, even though at the end of the film he admits that he hasn't seen Chris in 10 years since graduating high school.
But even then, he will miss him forever.
Yeah, he still has a deep, profound love and respect for Chris.
Well, and I think that we can all relate to that. We have people in our lives, and you know, part of the story is that friends come and friends go. He says that very specifically.
Like, and I love the way he says it. Friends come and go like busboys at a restaurant.
Yep.
Oh, you better get it, Stephen King. Yes.
But also, you can maintain and have somebody that you consider your very close best friend and not talk to them for years. But you know that they're there.
Yeah.
And so it would be, well, if they pass on, what's the big deal? You haven't talked to him in 10 years because he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss him. And then the flood of memories comes back. It's a great way to start the story.
Yeah, and I think it's the proper framing device because, you know, the meat of the story is the journey that the kids take to find the dead body, but it's encapsulated, it's framed within Gordy's own experience with death and how he has matured over the years because of it. That's the basic story, and that's the story that Rob Reiner admits that he wanted to tell. Okay. And, of course, Gordy, as the character, his first experience with death was his brother. His brother died in April of 1959. This is where the meat of the story takes place. And Gordy never gained any peace, any P-E-A-C-E, peace, from that experience. Just like his parents.
In fact, he admitted that he didn't even shed a tear at the funeral.
Yeah, he just didn't know. It's like he shut off.
Yes.
He
didn't know what to do.
Yeah. So this is where we meet the other kids. After establishing that little nugget, we meet his other friends. We meet Chris Chambers. We meet Vern, and we meet Teddy. They're all up in the clubhouse, you know, smoking and drinking and, you know, doing the things. You know, smoking, drinking, playing cards, cussing.
All the things you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, don't do those.
Yeah.
Don't do those. And he's, you know, they're up there hanging out. And then Vern comes up with this grandiose idea.
Hey, you guys. I bet you anything that if we find him, we'll get our pictures in the paper. Yeah, we can even be on TV.
Sure.
We'll be heroes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Billy will know, or I found out.
He's not going to care, because it's going to be us guys that find him, not Billy and Charlie Hogan in a boosted car. They'll probably pin a medal on you, Vern.
Yeah, you think so?
Sure.
What will we tell our folks?
Exactly what you said. We'll all tell our folks we're tenting out in your backfield. You tell your folks you're sleeping over at Teddy's. Then we say we're going over to the drag races the next day. We're rock solid till dinner tomorrow night.
Man, that's a plan and a half.
And, of course, the it and him that they're speaking of is the body.
The body, yeah. Which is the title of the actual short story.
Of the novella.
Yeah. And that collection is called Different Seasons.
Yes. That also includes Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption.
Yes. All right. So this little scene, it shows how irreverently and immaturely the group feels about death. You know, and, you know, they want to
capitalize on it.
They do. They want to become the decorated heroes of this small, you know, of podunk Yeah. Castle Rock.
Yes.
They want to become the decorated heroes. They want the glory. You know, they want people to praise them, to exalt them.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, because they're kids, Michael.
Yeah, and it could.
And they want that attention. They're obviously not getting it at home.
They're hurt kids.
They are hurt. They are broken kids.
Yes.
And, we find out throughout the movie they're not the only broken kids, because so are the Cobras.
Yep.
You know, but that point aside. You know, and they want to use this, like you said, they want to capitalize on it. And it's reminiscent of Ecclesiastes.
Yes.
I kind of said that weirdly. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 4, a wise person thinks a lot about death, while a fool thinks only about having a good time.
Oh!
So it could be thusly argued that these kids are fools.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to have a good time surrounding this dead body. They want to, you know, they want to go rescue it, you know, if you can rescue a dead person, I don't know. You know, they want to go get the body, present it to the authorities, and then have their names in the newspaper and in the news.
Yeah.
They want to be famous. And this is their one way to do it. However, Gordy cannot be as enthusiastic as they are.
I wanted to share my friend's enthusiasm, but I couldn't. That summer at home, I had become the invisible boy.
Mom! You know what my canteen is? Mom!
It's in Denny's room.
Oh.
In April, my older brother Dennis had been killed in a Jeep accident. 4 months had passed, but my parents still hadn't been able to put the pieces back together again.
So, you know, like we've already talked about, the parents, they're still having the trouble of mourning, of grieving the loss of their oldest son, the champion. You know, as we see when he goes into his room, Dennis himself is a decorated athlete. I think a football player.
He's a football star.
Yeah, he's the high school guy. He's the high school king, and of course he dies in a car accident. Parents don't know how to deal with it, and I think that speaks to the parents of children who are, you know, kind of like this. I'm not going to throw out any judgment calls. But it's when the parents can't deal with something, it transfers to their kids.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
You know, it just because that the kids see that in their parents,
yep.
And therefore they believe that's the only way to deal with it.
All of us who are parents know that to be true.
Okay, so I'm not speaking out of line because I myself am not a parent.
Right. No, but that is a truth.
Okay, well there you go. He can't share in his friend's excitement to go find this body. He just wants closure.
He does.
He wants to find that closure, and he believes he'll get it. And this is very, you could say this is Gordy wanting to become wise. He doesn't want to be a fool like I'm sure he thinks his parents are fools for not moving on.
Right.
His friends, you know, they're fools for wanting to glorify in something that's impacted him so negatively. And he wants to get on with his life. He wants to become wise, and the way he initially wants to do it is by studying death objectively.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, but literally by looking at a dead body and seeing what this all comes to. And honestly, I think, Michael, at this point, I'm going to toss it over to you. I think I've set up the frame for you.
All right. Well, I have titled, Brendan, I did not know what I was going to talk about in this film. And as it happens often, it came to me this morning. Okay. Right at the last minute. You know, as I'm, you know, I'm showering and I shaved today for you, Brendan. Did you notice?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. How could you not notice?
Well, because there's a beard in front of the place where you shaved.
And it came to me, and I'm titling my little section here, The Beatitudes and the Body, or Stand for Me.
But Michael, the movie's called Stand By Me.
I know, but if they knew that this was a good tool for spreading the gospel, Rob Reiner would surely have. He renamed the book, so he might as well, you know, change the name again to to stand for me. And it reminds me, Brendan, right off the bat, of this quote by Samwise Gamgee from Return of the King, as Frodo is lying there unable to get into the door to the fires of Mount Doom. They are right at the doorway of their goal where they needed to be, and he cannot. He is overtaken by the ring at that point. And Sam gets up and he says, I may not be, this gets me choked up even thinking about this, I may not be able to carry it for you, Mr. Frodo, speaking of the ring, I may not be able to carry it for you, but I can carry you. And he does. Picks him up and carries him in there. He doesn't stand by Frodo. He stands for Frodo. It reminds me of a quote that I just read today, Brendan, out of that Philip Yancey Grace Notes book. And patron Saint Philip, thank you so much once again for that gift. Because in today's excerpt, I guess, check out this quote. Philip Yancey says, quote, by serving the needy, we serve God in disguise. That's going to tie right into my key text that we'll get to here in just a moment. Stand By Me is the tale of two friends. This is, at its core, it's about Gordy LaChance and Chris Chambers, who each have deep hurts in their lives, just as everybody, we've already alluded to it, everybody in this film has deep hurts. The only person that may not is Vern, and it's because he's a very naive individual, and he's just wanting to find his pennies. Well, maybe he's hurt because he can't find his pennies, but we don't know. We'll clump him in with everybody. Everybody has deep hurts. And they also, Gordy and Chris, they have each other. They're best friends.
Yeah.
Says it, you know, time and again in this film. In fact, they have, Brendan, what looks to be brotherly love. The Greek philia, right? Good brotherly love. But in reality, it's much more in tune with agape love. That is a covenant love. A love that's full of charity. A love that's intentional. A love that's self-sacrificing, selfless, committed to the well-being of each other, and it extends to those around them, even those outside of their assembly. They have a two-man assembly, but wherever two or three are gathered in my name.
I mean, hey, it fits.
I'm pulling that out of context, but that's okay. Just using it for the show. That's the kind of love that these two have. Now, Gordy LaChance, as we have said, is in mourning over his brother's death. He's also mourning over his broken relationship with his father. You have a sound clip that'll exemplify that coming up.
Yeah. Yes.
He is also in mourning over his own feelings of worthlessness. Buying the hamburger and the soda and stuff from that guy in that shop, the guy wants to talk to him about his brother. Oh, what a ball player he was.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, rude man. Hey, kid, well, what do you do? Huh? Do you play football? No. Oh, yeah, that's it. Do you play football? What? Do you play football, kid? No. No. Well, what do you do? I don't know. He could have told him, I'm a writer. But he doesn't feel that that's of any value.
He had been so discouraged because the only person who believed in him as a writer had died.
Yep. He's gone.
Yeah.
But more importantly, his father has no regard for that.
Right.
You know, who cares about that, his father may well say. Play football, you know, be a man, play football. So he won't even tell people that he's a writer. In fact, well, he's suffering with these things, but he also, Brendan, he's an encourager. He's an encourager. And he encourages his friend Chris. See how I want to put all these clips together here, because I have them all out of order. At that scene when they are in the forest and it's Chris's turn to watch and Gordy wakes up and goes up and sits next to him, what's on his heart? He has a word of encouragement for him, but it pulls out of Chris the deep hurts that are in him.
Maybe you could go into the college courses with me. That'll be the day. Why not? You're smart enough.
He won't let me.
What do you mean?
It's the way that people think of my family in this town. It's the way they think of me. I'm just one of those low-life Chambers kids.
That's not true.
Oh, it is. No one even asked me if I took the milk money that time. I just got a 3-day vacation.
Did you take it?
Yeah, I took it. You knew I took it. Teddy knew I took it. Everyone knew I took it. Even Vern knew it, I think. Maybe I was sorry and I tried to give it back.
You tried to give it back?
Maybe. Just maybe. And maybe I took it to old lady Simons and told her, and the money was all there. But I still got a 3-day vacation because I never showed up. And maybe the next week, old lady Simons had this brand new sugar on when she came to school.
Yeah, it was brown and had dots on it.
Yeah. So let's just say that I stole the milk money, but old lady Simon stole it back from me. Just suppose that I told the story. Me, Chris Chambers, kid brother to Eyeball Chambers. Do you think that anyone would have believed it?
Oh. No.
Of course not. No.
So Gordy has all these hurts inside of him that are driving him, but he is still an encourager. He has that agape love for his brother, Chris Chambers. He loves him. And he says, "What? You know what? Come with me. Sign up for the college courses. Come with me. Do something." "No, I can't. This town will not let me," Chris Chambers says. And then he's able to pour out his hurts. His hurts are that he's in bondage to his family reputation.
Yep.
So much so, Brendan, that he's not even allowed to repent. He can't repent of wrongdoing. They won't allow him to do that. You're a Chambers kid. You guys are no good. So much so that a teacher can steal that money that he's bringing back because he repented and he was sorry for it. She goes, nobody will. This is perfect. This money's mine. He'll go and tell everybody I gave the money back, and I'll just say he didn't to me. And they're going to believe her because he's Chris Chambers, the Chambers family. So he is in bondage to that. But again, I want to make the point that the pain that Gordy has does not prevent him from encouraging his friend.
Exactly.
And then we get to learn about Chris Chambers and his reputation. But Chris Chambers is a peacemaker. And we learn that one of my favorite interactions is between he and Teddy when Teddy wants to dodge that train. And Chris, "No, you're going to get killed. Get off there." He goes up there and physically grabs him and pulls him off. And then they get into all kinds of big ruckus. But he wants to make peace.
"I don't need no babysitter."
"You do too. Skin it.
I could have dodged it."
"Listen, Teddy, you can dodge it on the way back, man. Peace. Skin it."
"Skin it" means peace.
Yeah.
Let's have peace. I'm about peace. I'm a peacemaker. But being a peacemaker means more than just, everybody get along. No, you do things proactively. And he has always done that for Teddy.
Teddy's crazy.
"Where's the beer? Come on! Come on, man! Move it out!"
"Yeah. He won't live to be 20, I bet."
"Remember the time you saved him in the tree?"
"Yeah. You know, I dream about that sometimes. Except in the dream, I always miss him. I just get a couple of his hairs and down he goes. It's weird."
"Yeah, it is weird. But you didn't miss him.
Chris Chambers never misses, does he?"
And Gordy's saying that Chris Chambers never misses. That doesn't mean, that's not an absolute truth. That is words of love and respect and admiration.
Yeah.
He admires the kind of person that Chris is. And Chris, he did save Teddy, but in his dreams, he's worried about, what if I can't save somebody?
Yeah.
Because he's a peacemaker. So much so that peacemaking extends also, not to just physically grabbing somebody. So Peace is, hey, I just saved your life. I know you wanted to kill, you wanted to dodge that train. You could do that on the way back. We're on a mission right now. So, you know, I'm sorry that I just saved your life. Peace. Let's have peace. Then, hey, you're falling out of a tree. I'm a peacemaker. I want everything to be well. I'm going to grab you and save you. I'll be there to save you. And then suffer nightmares that he wouldn't be able to actually fulfill that.
Yeah.
But it also goes into the emotional when he is talking to Chris as they're walking along the train tracks. Well, most of this movie takes place walking along the train tracks. But so you have Vern and Teddy up there just arguing about who could win a fight between Mighty Mouse and Superman.
Yeah, right.
And then Chris and Gordy are talking about life. And he tells Gordy, you can be a great writer. And Gordy blows up. Don't forget about writing. Writing is stupid.
Yeah.
That's a waste of time. He should have, he, you know, in his mind, he's thinking, I should be playing football, right? Because, what does Chris say? That's your dad talking. That is your dad talking. I'm not even going to stand for it.
You're just a kid, Gordy. Oh, gee, thanks, Dad. Wish the hell I was your dad. You wouldn't be going around talking about taking these stupid shop courses if I was. It's like God gave you something, man. All those stories that you can make up. And he said, this is what we got for you, kid. Try not to lose it. But kids lose everything unless there's someone there to look out for them.
And which is implied, he's going to finish that up. And if your parents aren't going to be the ones to watch out for you, I will.
Yes.
Because I love you. This is what people that have that kind of love for each other do. Two passages out of the Beatitudes. Since I mentioned the Beatitudes at the outset, right, I ought to go ahead and
bring them in now. Yeah.
Matthew 5 and verse 4 out of the New English Translation. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And that is for Gordy. He's mourning, and Chris is doing everything he can to comfort him. And he does. He does. Matthew 5, verse 9, out of the New English Translation. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. And that's for Chris. And he is. He's a peacemaker. He gives his life as a peacemaker. That's, I mean, I can't think of a higher, a greater honor, right? I mean, to give up your life in order to maintain peace between others. But then something happens, Brendan, seeing this is so perfect for Good Friday. Because you know what? Good Friday is really not good if you think about it in its physical sense.
In its worldly, technical sense.
It's the ugliest day that's ever happened.
Right.
So much so that the sun refused to shine.
Yeah,
for a period of time, as God himself hung on that cross. Despised by men, rejected by God. It was a dark day. We call it Good Friday because Isaiah chapter 53 and verse 5, everybody's going to be reading this here this weekend. He was wounded because of our rebellious deeds, crushed because of our sins. He endured punishment that made us well. Because of his wounds, we have been healed. Now, when they get to the body of Ray Brower, they find him beaten, bruised, broken, and to stick with the bees, I'll say bereft of life. He was dead. They are both changed forever. At that point, you've already alluded to that catharsis, that closure, I guess, that Gordy experiences.
Well, catharsis means release of emotions.
Yes.
At the funeral, he couldn't cry for his brother.
Right.
Here in this moment, that's where he gets that release.
Would you say he was healed?
Yes, okay. Very much so. But not because he cried.
Right.
But because Chris was there to catch those tears on his shoulder.
So, how many people were present around that body of Ray Brower. He had the four protagonists, and then he had, I counted, seven antagonists. Okay, but... Okay, whoa,
Michael.
No.
Michael.
Stop, I'm not going to go there.
Nuh-uh. Oh, that's so... Oh!
Okay, but wait, stop.
Kapow. Kapow.
Okay, 12...
Stop! Anyway, stop!
But what, only two were changed. Only two were healed that we know of. Because Vern and Teddy, they weren't changed. And obviously the Cobras were not changed. But these two guys were changed. And I'm going to submit, Brendan, that body healed both of them. Because it was at that point that that Chris, he makes a change. And he heeds Gordy's suggestion. And he enrolls in those college courses with them. And he becomes something. He leaves that town that he didn't think that he ever could. He leaves that reputation that he was in bondage to. He was freed from that by the body, that broken body that he sees where everything comes together. That is the climax. That is the point of healing for both of those boys. And he even gives his life, well, I already said he gives his life in his continued role as peacemaker, right? And Gordy is at peace with his brother's death. At that point, and drawing on Denny's, his brother's, and Chris's confidence, he becomes the writer that, to quote Chris, God made you to be. That's a gift God gave you. You can't throw that away. God gave that to you. So he seizes that. Thus, Gordy LaChance and Chris Chambers are both healed by the broken body and fulfilled the law in the process by standing for each other. And Brendan, for those people that are out there talking to their friends about Stand By Me here, when you are sitting on your
double-decker couch.
Have you ever seen Stand By Me? Hey, you know what? You don't even have to say yes or no. Hey, you know what? Let's talk about the body, okay? Your key text, Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. I'm going to read it out of the New Living Translation because it just reads real nicely. Share each other's burdens. And in this way, obey the law of Christ. Other translations say, thus, carry each other's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. That's the law of Christ.
Yeah.
So that's their journey, is being healed by the broken body and living in a state of fulfilling the law of Christ.
Let me add on to that.
Please do.
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
I'm all ears.
If Chris Chambers was not present on this journey, would Gordy have been healed?
No.
I'm glad you said that.
Okay.
Because it is Chris Chambers, as we've already made the case for, he is the peacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
He is the bringer of peace.
And part of that role is he's an encourager as well.
Yeah.
As well as Gordy. They're both encouragers. They're both peacemakers, actually. They need each other. They are standing for each other. I can't carry your burdens for you. I can't carry your hurts for you, Chris. Well, I can't carry your hurts for you, Gordy, but I can carry you.
Actually, let's listen to that clip of the scene where... Well, let's just listen.
Why did Denny have to die? Why? I don't know. It should have been me. Don't say that. It should have been me. Don't say that, man. I'm no good. My dad said it. I'm no good. He doesn't know you. He hates me. He doesn't hate you. He hates me. No. He just doesn't know you.
And it continues just a little second, but just from that alone, every time Gordy says something, Chris counters it.
Because he's trying to interject peace into his heart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Gordy, yes, Gordy is bearing his heart right there. He couldn't do it at his brother's funeral. Why? Mm-hmm. Because his parents could not be there for him.
Right.
They may have been in the same room for him, but spiritually speaking, they could not be there for him because whatever reasons they themselves,
they're not Christians. They're not doing what Paul said to share each other's burdens and in this way obey the law of Christ.
Oh man. So moving on from the parents, okay. We keep bringing them up because they're important only for this, I think.
Yes.
Since they could not do that, Gordy's still hurt.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be stoic like his father, keep it on the inside, the good old American way. I hate to say it, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
He could not have that release until that moment at the body with Chris, countering every frivolous thought of worthlessness,
yes,
that came out of his mouth, every voice of despair.
Yep.
Chris was
that's
there.
Communal living.
Yes.
That's community, which alludes to what I was talking to you before the show, the articles I've been talking about. No, not in the individualism of American Christianity. Let's go back to the communal living paradigm.
Yeah.
First century Christianity and Jewish culture before that.
Yep.
Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. And you are at, yes, it couldn't have worked unless they were both there together because salvation is a community thing.
Yep. And I honestly believe that is what really helps Gordy as a grown person, as a grown man. That's what helps him deal with Chris's death.
Yeah.
Because Gordy as a child had already experienced the peace that Chris as a person brought.
Yeah.
And even when he died, Chris also transmitted that peace again.
Yep.
To Gordon.
And especially because Chris died doing the very thing that he was created to do, and he's a peacemaker.
Oh, we should have, Michael, we could have focused this thing on Chris a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay, so one last little sound clip from me.
Okay.
This is after the journey. They're on the way back home. Well,
it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
We headed home, and although many thoughts raced through our minds, we barely spoke. We walked through the night and made it back to Castle Rock a little past 5 o'clock on Sunday morning, the day before Labor Day. We'd only been gone 2 days, but somehow the town seemed different, smaller.
In school. Yeah.
See you in junior high.
Man. Okay, now, I gotta say it here and now.
Okay.
He said we came back that Sunday morning. Now, Michael, I do not believe it is coincidence that we that we chose this movie for
It has for to Easter be providence, weekend. Huh?
This because I mean let's think of someone else in history who left on a Friday and came back on a Sunday.
Somebody very important. We're celebrating them this weekend, as a matter of fact.
A lot of people are.
Yes,
a lot of you know. It's,
billions it's, of people are
worldwide.
Yes.
Okay, so that aside, just want to throw it out there. It ain't coincidence. This is providence, yeah. Like you just said. So we see the splitting.
Are you saying that God is overriding my objections to this movie and wanted us to cover this week on episode 52 of FCC?
I am not going to say that, Michael. I think the fact that you brought it up speaks for itself.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
Yes, it is, Peter. Thank you.
Sir Peter.
Sir Peter. So we see, you know, we see this group of friends break up. Teddy and Vern, they just become faces in the hallway. You know, they grow apart. But hey, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's life. That's how it goes. Gordy and Chris, they maintain their bond through high school. And, of course, after high school, they just go their separate ways. That's just how it happens. But like we've already said, the bond between Gordy and Chris, this brotherly love, it was so strong that Gordy still felt the sting of death.
Yeah.
When he read that newspaper headline. However, it was different from when he felt the first sting of death.
Yes.
With his brother.
Yes.
It was different because he had been on that journey with such a peacemaker.
Yes.
As Chris.
Yeah.
And like I said, that peace transmitted, well, first of all, it transcends all understanding if we're going to get technical about it.
Yes.
But it transmitted from Chris to Gordy. And then, you know, I'm sure if there were a sequel, I'm sure Gordy would now have the ability to do the same thing for other people.
Amen. Amen.
And that's where I'm going to leave it off.
I think we nailed it.
I think so, too.
I think we redeemed Stand By Me for the Lord and Savior of the universe. How about some feedback, Brendan? Do we have any this week?
Oh, yeah.
We do?
Good old patron saint. We're going to Phillips Horse Stables.
King Phillips.
King Phillips Horse Stables.
Yes.
King Phillips Stables. That's
yes.
What it was. Yeah. King Phillips Stables. I haven't seen Mockingjay yet and thought about skipping the review portion of the show. But decided to take a spoiler risk. I don't think I really heard anything that would spoil the film, so it worked out.
Oh, good.
There you go.
Hey, we can spoil a film without spoiling it.
No, right?
We can spoil a film and it still tastes good.
Well, now, technically...
Yeah.
Ooh, Michael, don't... technically, because Mockingjay Part 1 is Part 1... Can't really
there's no closure.
It. Yeah, there's no closure anyway, yeah. So we're just setting up the stage for Part 2,
yep.
Which better deliver, that's all I'm saying. Anyway, back to the feedback. I like the point that District 13 was using some of the same tactics of the Capitol in fighting them.
Yeah.
1 Peter 3:9 tells us not to repay evil with evil or insult with insult. And, I think Jesus says the same thing, but it's just echoing Jesus. And it's really easy to respond negatively.
Peter knew him.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at that. Didn't he, he even left him a time or two.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hot-headed Peter.
Yeah, poor guy. It's real easy to respond negatively to people who are ugly to us, but we're called to respond in love and grace when insulted. That's the one thing I got from the show. # But we allowed Gimlet.
Yay! Great comment and excellent points. And thank you, Philip, for listening and risking having the movie spoiled for you. And your feedback is just nothing but a blessing and an encouragement to us. And
yes, I agree.
And please keep it coming. We need that. And we need the different perspectives. We need the other listeners to hear different perspectives from everybody out there that listens. So, everybody, we will give you all the ways to contact us in just a few moments so that we can include your comments on the show so that you, too, can bless other listeners out there. Anything else?
No.
Want some real news?
Roll it!
All right. From LatinoReview.com, Hugh Jackman becomes all things to all people in order that he might win some. Recent movie buzz is that the Hugh Jackman is finally stepping down from his role as the self-healing, unbreakable superhero mutant Wolverine and will step into the role of an even more powerful Apostle Paul.
Ho-ho.
Whoa! Warner Brothers is bringing Matt Cook's screenplay to the big screen, telling the story of Saul of Tarsus. Matt Damon, Ben Batfleck, and Hugh Jackman are on board to produce the film. That's all that I know about this so far, except for I am geeking out humongously.
I am too.
What do you think of this?
First of all, Hugh Jackman as the Apostle Paul?
Hey. Oh, man.
I mean, I can see it.
Yes.
I can see it.
Jean Valjean, I can see aspects of that. Oh, yeah. Man.
Oh, I mean, because it kind of shares that same.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about art having two parts to it, content and form. The content between the Apostle Paul and Jean Valjean, there's so many crossovers we wouldn't be able to count them all.
In fact, listeners, if you haven't done so, go back in the archives and find our episode on
Les Mis Rob.
Well, Hugh Jackman blew me away. His acting abilities in that film, Les Mis Rob, blew me away.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always looked at him as it's a fine actor, but very typecast, I guess.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know,
yeah.
Which is a good thing for him to step down from Wolverine. Well, besides, I mean, at 46 years old, how long can you do? I mean, he's already been complaining about, man, that hurts. That role hurts my body.
Yeah.
You know? And he is a fine actor. He's a fine actor. In Inception, we should have said, in fact.
Wait, no.
I mean, The Prestige.
Prestige.
We should have said FCC's very own Hugh Jackman.
Oh, we should have.
You know? Let's start the show over.
Okay.
Get a running start at it.
Hey, you're tuned in to Fighting. Oh, wait.
So, this movie can go all kinds of crazy as far as awesome. All kinds of awesome. Awesome sauce will be exuding from this. But what about Matt Damon and Ben Batfleck?
What about them?
Producing? Along with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Now, I did read a little clip that, they realize that these Bible movies are really hot commodity right now, you know, with Moses and Noah, and
of course the ones that aren't based on biblical stuff, like Heaven Is For Real, God's right. Not Dead.
Those aren't big though. Are they?
I mean, they're big for the audience that they're catering to.
Well, for a guy that sits in the GCT Network studio all day long, I'm not aware of how big those are.
Well, okay. Well, I think you're better for it.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, sorry.
I'll stay put then. Okay. Let me ask you this then. This is where I wanted to go.
Okay.
What other Bible stories do you want to see come to the big screen?
That I personally want to see. Let's see. Not Left Behind. even though I would want to see, if there was any way.
You want Nicolas Cage to play.
No.
Gosh, that was a scoffing sound.
If there was any way to tell the story of the revelation and not bleed into fear mongering, I would want to see it.
Huh.
Now,
so you just wanted to see a big old CGI
off of that
fest.
Off of that,
okay.
I would want to see. Dramatically speaking, I would want to see a David story.
You win, because that's what I was going to say. Number one,
I want to
see David.
I want to see... Now, Michael... Oh, I could have done this for a film news story. I didn't. But a production of David and Goliath...
But that's an independent kind of a film.
Well, it's still though. I would try to go see it.
I want to see everything Hollywood can throw at it. That's what I want to see. I want to see it all. I want to see the best writers, the best actors, and the best special effects.
Well,
I want to see
go.
It all.
The Bing Bang Boom.
It's time to go back to the 50s version of big Bible movies and epic stuff like that.
Also, let's.
But I would also like to have the option of reviewing the script before they do it.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we don't get any I'm Moses.
Yeah. let's see. What else?
I want to sign off.
Samson could be a good
movie
subject.
Yep.
You know, his little life.
Gideon.
Gideon, yeah.
Joshua.
Joshua, especially following Moses.
Mm.
Trying to live up to those
things.
What
else?
Let's see. Well, we could just look through Genesis.
I know.
Joseph. Yeah.
Job.
Now, it's funny you say Job, because there's actually a play. It's called JB.
Oh, yeah. You talked about that.
Okay, I thought I had. Yeah. And for those who don't know still, it was a play written in the 1950s by Archibald MacLeish. He got the Pulitzer for it.
He was on the VeggieTales. Archibald Asparagus?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
Different Archibald.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. And
the artist formerly known as Archibald Asparagus?
No, no, still not that guy. But what JB does is it sets up a framing device of these two circus workers. And, you know, they walk through the stage. It's after a big circus show. They're cleaning up. You know, they're like the, in the Rocky Bullwinkle cartoons, they're the guy that's sweeping up behind the parade.
That's from the Cracked Fairy Tales.
Fractured.
Fractured.
Fairy Tales.
Sorry.
Michael, you're closer to that. You should know.
I'm older.
Anyway, it starts off with those two characters, and then one assumes the role of God, and the other assumes the role of Satan. And then from there...
The
accuser. And from there, they literally set the stage for this story of JB, who is a prominent banker, real estate owner.
Yeah.
Or estate owner, rather. And, you know, of course, he loses everything, loses family, loses land, loses health. His friends come in, try to cheer him up, do a terrible job at it. And it's really cool how Archibald MacLeish kind of revamps the story of Job. Huh. So I wouldn't mind seeing that as a movie.
Well, let's throw it out to the listeners. What Bible story or character do you want to see depicted on the big screen? So
now I do want to also add there's a TV series coming up shortly. AD.
Yeah, and that's
the sequel. I've always been interested in Stephen the Martyr.
Oh yeah,
the way he did his thing, I want to see that depicted somewhere.
I would like to see a story about Philip, because Philip makes his way throughout all of Acts. I mean, you get to find him over a period of 20 years. You know, from the Ethiopian eunuch. And you know, we're talking the evangelist, Philip, not the apostle. And
not patron saint Philip either.
Yeah, right. Philip is a great name. Philip Yancey, we're surrounded by Philips. But yeah, I would like to see, that would make a great story as well. But again, listeners, Ron, Philip, David Gaddy, all y'all out there, who would you like to see a Hollywood blockbuster film depicting?
You know, I just thought about it.
You did?
Stephen could be in the Saul Paul movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
In fact, there's a good chance that he will be.
Oh, that'll be so
cool. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that'll be good.
Be okay. Setting up for a sequel. Good job, Hugh Jackman and Matt Damon and Ben Batfleck. Do you have any news?
Now, there's some stuff that came out. We'll just let the rundown speak for itself.
All right, a quick rundown of the articles posted on the Finding Christ in Cinema Facebook page this past week at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema.
So, Man of Steel director to helm Isaac Newton adventure movie.
Okay.
David Goyer is apparently directing or going to direct a film based on Sir Isaac Newton. And
is this going to star The Rock? Is this going to be like Journey 3 or something?
I guess. I don't know. This is going to be weird, but... not directing. Sorry, producing.
All right.
Get that right, producing. More news on that as it develops.
Oh, can't wait.
Here we go. The Rogue Cut to add over 11 minutes of new X-Men Days of Future Past to the DVD version and restores a beloved character.
Yes, yes. They had to do a whole new director's cut of X-Men Days of Future Past because of the uproar of, where's Rogue?
Yeah.
And they filmed all the scenes and just cut them all out.
Yep.
And fans just went ballistic about that. So it's actually, 11 minutes is really a good chunk of screen time. They're going to be adding a whole subplot to this new cut.
Hey, let it happen.
That is tentatively called, or its secret code name, The Rogue Cut. Oh, wait. The Rogue Cut. Okay.
Clint Eastwood to direct Jonah Hill and Leo DiCaprio?
Well, that I could see, but Jonah Hill?
Jonah Hill?
I can't see Clint dealing with Jonah Hill.
Well,
sit down, kid.
Okay.
Listen, listen, you punk. I told you.
What are you going to do, Eastwood? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Okay, so apparently the story of this film.
Okay, go ahead.
The story of this film would involve the bomb threat that happened at the Olympics a while back where a security guard apparently thwarted a plot to blow up the games. That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially with Jonah Hill. Although I will say Jonah Hill's not bad.
Well, his portrayal of the security guard in Night at the Museum Part 2, stellar. Listen, I will literally rent a RV and drive around the country with my flashlight on your chest.
All right. Hank Williams Sr. biopic, I Saw the Light, finally lands at Sony Pictures Classics.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
I can't wait for that.
But unfortunately, still no release date.
Well,
man, y'all, we're getting antsy. Hey,
yeah, I know.
We are getting antsy. Well, hey, another live-action Disney movie. Wait a minute. Winnie the Pooh?
Where is Scooby-Doo?
What? Well, I was about to say there's already a Scooby-Doo live-action movie.
Oh, I know. We got those. What is, live-action Winnie the Pooh?
Hey.
What?
Hey. I don't know what to tell you.
No, just tell me April Fools. That's April. That was posted on April 1st. That was posted yesterday, Brendan, and you got suckered.
Time will tell.
Oh man,
time will tell. Hey, new trailer for Last Night, starring FCC's very own Morgan Freeman.
The first time was better. Okay. We're going to have to clip that and just put it in the cart.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to do it again.
Yeah, I'll clip it. Yeah, that trailer looks good. I mean, just for, you know, action, adventure, fun stuff. And it has Morgan Freeman.
So an update on the third Tron film. It may now have a title.
Yeah.
But will it have the dude?
Well, we'll find out more as it develops.
And it may be called, the title may be Tron Ascension.
I like it.
So, hey, yeah, sounds good enough for me. Moving on down, look for the new trailer for Star Wars The Force Awakens with the Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yeah, we got 1 month to go, baby.
Now, really quick, I mentioned that I saw Get Hard.
Yeah.
With that, if there was anything to redeem about that experience, was the new trailer for Age of Ultron.
Oh, so you were forced to watch it.
Yes.
Now you can go ahead and agree with me that it's a whole lot of new footage.
I was forced to awaken.
Yeah. Oh.
But yes, new footage, and I got excited.
Yes.
Of course, I'm going to get excited with any footage I see from it.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm getting pumped for it.
Oh.
Moving on down to another live-action Disney, Mulan.
Eh, I'm not a Mulan fan.
What?
But my wife said...
What will my reflection show?
My wife... Are they going to have Eddie Murphy in a dragon costume?
They better.
My wife says that would be a pretty intense film, though.
It would be, yeah. Hey, by the way, that Monday movie review on Do You Believe?
Yeah!
It's up.
Hey,
it's up on FCC.com.
Alrighty.
Or FCC.GCT Network.
No, just say ChristInCinema.com. In fact, everybody forget what he just said.
You can find the Monday movie review on Do You Believe at ChristInCinema.com.
There you go.
Will we see Shrek in Puss in Boots 2?
I hope so.
Antonio Banderas dropped some big hints in that direction. Hashtag big green smiley face.
Yeah!
Michael, you and your hashtags.
I developed a big green smiley face for that.
Oh, great.
What? Break it to us.
More Transformers on the way.
Lots of it.
Sequels, spinoffs.
More Transformers than you can shake a stick at. When will it stop?
And I think what you mean to say is too much more. All right. Hey, there's those hobbits in the studio. And there's the podcast. All right, that covers
so
it.
So we are all caught up. That yes, was sir. Our rundown of all the articles posted on our Facebook page the past week. You can join us over there, like us, be our friend, and reshare our stuff at facebook.com/ChristInCinema. Listeners, what Christian themes have you found in Stand By Me? Did Brendan and I miss some really big ones that you thought that we should have brought out? Perhaps just ones that you want to add to ours so that we can further redeem Stand For Me. So let us know. We'll give you all the ways of contacting us in just a moment. But Brendan, what are we going to do next week?
Well, Michael.
Yeah.
We'll be going into the future a little bit.
Back to the Future?
No. Not that kind of future.
Oh, okay.
That would technically be in the past. Although, 2015 is the year of Back to the Future Part 2.
Oh.
Because that's where Future Biff goes to get
yes,
the almanac.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to have to watch that again.
I mean, you don't have to, because none of the
No, stuff, I do have to.
And none of the stuff came true, though.
I have to watch it. I love that movie.
Okay.
One of my very favorites of all time. What are we going to do next week?
Well, Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah!
Oh, yeah.
Emily Blunt and her husband, the baker. And
Not and Johnny Depp, no.
Edge of the Woods?
No, Edge of Meryl Streep into the Woods. No. No, Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You can't forget about Tom Cruise.
I can. But some good sci-fi action. It was a fun movie. Looking forward to finding some Christian themes in that. And we'll be back, Lord willing, next week. Every week we're here in the studio live at the GCT Network studio right around 3 p.m. Central Time. You can join us for audio and video and especially the chat room using the chat room and the players at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. For all things Finding Christ in Cinema, the podcast, Brendan's Monday movie reviews that are out on Friday. No, wait, what? Friday. I don't know. I'm confused about that, but you can find out over there as well as all the links to the social networking sites that we are a part of. Get over to ChristInCinema.com. You can send us email to FCC@GCTNetwork.com. And Brendan, hopefully coming next week, our brand new P.O. Box.
Hey, there you go. Now, let's say you don't want to fiddle faddle with the P.O. Box.
What a bunch of hippy dippy baloney.
Thank you, Lord Business. Now sit back down, please. You want to leave us a voicemail. You want to call 507-407-GCTN. However, if you're afraid of letters, if you're afraid of the alphabet, you may like comedians.
You know I hate comedians.
Or you may not. It's fine. It's completely okay. You can call us on our other voice line at 507-407-4286.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Now, let's say you want to listen to the podcast on any number of services, but the air got to it.
The air got to it!
You're a sad, strange little man.
You are a sad, strange little man.
And you don't want to mess with any well-mannered frivolity.
Yeah.
Well-mannered frivolity.
You can find us at iTunes, you can find us at Stitcher, and you can find us at TuneIn Radio. Just search the stores for Finding Christ in Cinema.
That's just as fascinating as the first 89 times you told me that.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas, the Theonauts, get over to the official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
Barf-O-Rama.
Potatoes.
Barf-O-Rama.
Potatoes.
Barf-O-Rama.
Potatoes.
And that is a wrap!
It's stuff like this that gives me trust issues.
Inconceivable! Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
I don't understand, moron.
It's a madhouse! A madhouse!
I'm a miracle man.
There's no such thing as magic.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
It's gossip.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com. This is your Great Commission.